Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools, all made to fast-track your success. Put the go in your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and start your free trial today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, on a Thursday, which brings us very, very close to the weekend, which is a good thing, I think. Sue, do you agree with that or not?
Absolutely.
You seemed a little hesitant on that statement.
Well,
so I didn't know if maybe you were...
I was trying to think, wait, this is really Thursday? I was still thinking it was
It's a week away from Thanksgiving. It's a week from today, which I guess puts Christmas at like just 5 weeks away, which is kind of hard to believe. I think I'm going to flip the Christmas lights on Sunday night. Shh, don't tell anyone.
Will you just do it?
I might go early.
Fred, tell him to just do it.
Just do it.
I'm breaking...
Hang on. Neighborhood.
Hang on. There we go. What did you say?
We already have lights up in our neighborhood.
You do?
So go ahead and do it.
All right. I've gotten some tweets from some people who have supported me on my hypocrisy, since I always say wait until Thanksgiving. You know, it's just, I figure if J.D. Vance can call Trump Hitler in 2016 and be the next vice president, I can change my mind on the early lighting of Christmas lights, right?
I'm not sure how those are even remotely related.
They are. They're exactly the same,
Sue. I will say yes.
Yeah, they're exactly the same. I think the audience appreciates that for sure. Well, as we get started here today... Matt Gaetz is out as AG pick. Who could have seen that coming, huh?
What did he say when he withdrew?
Well, I don't know. Fred, you have audio here. Did he say what he said? Did he say anything today?
I don't think we've actually heard him say anything.
I think
his release said he thought it was he didn't want to tie down the Trump administration. They need to hit the ground running, and he's afraid that his nomination, his confirmation, would have slowed things down.
Right. We kind of tried to tell him that, some of us, a week ago, and nobody seemed to listen. Trump moved forward with this. Here's what he said yesterday.
They've been going great. Senator's been giving me a lot of good advice. I'm looking forward to a hearing. Folks have been very supportive. They've been saying we're going to get a fair process. So it's a great day of momentum for the Trump-Vance administration.
Any reaction to the Ethics Committee? They said they're not going to release the report after their meeting today, at least at this point. Any response?
I'll be honest with you. I've been focused on what we got to do to reform the Department of Justice. I've been meeting with senators. I haven't been paying much attention to that.
Let me translate that for you, ladies and gentlemen. I think most of you kind of get it, but I just got done with some Senate visits on Capitol Hill. They did not go very well, and I do not have the support and the votes, so I'm going to have to think of something here, and I'm going to withdraw this nomination, because I think that that was what yesterday was all about. It was trying to, you know, see how much support there was, and I don't think it was there, and that's not a mystery. It shouldn't be a mystery, because there were too many Republicans that already had responded in ways that were, you know, more than a little cautious, I would say. Here's John Fetterman, by the way. I thought, you know, I'm not even exactly sure always how to interpret the tone of Senator Fetterman, because he can, you know, he can use a little humor and satire. Let's test this one out. I just found this before the show, Fred. All right?
Holy shit. I didn't see that coming.
Oh.
I mean, like, yes, he was the ultimate troll, and people have the opportunity, they can freak out over things and respond, and if you want to do that, you don't have to. You better pace yourself, though, because it's not even Thanksgiving, and we don't have to react and take unserious things so seriously that the world's going to spin off its axis the way it is right now. But I just heard something. I heard that Trump is going to issue a new silver dollar to commemorate that. So I think that's going to be the next cycle.
See, I think he's kind of funny. I'm just saying he'll take. I've heard the damn commercial for the shoes and the gold coins so many times, but I'm pretty
sure there's a Trump guitar.
There's
now.
A new guitar now too.
Yep. Yep.
Well, you know, here's what happened, I guess, and we'll let Carrie Urban. Carrie does a great job at Fox.
It was the right decision to withdraw. Matt Gaetz did not have a path forward in the Senate, and if Donald Trump had tried to jam him through via, say, a recess appointment, it would have been challenged in court. A court may have found the appointment illegal, and the key here is that if, in fact, the appointment was to be found illegal, everything that Matt Gaetz would have done up until that point as AG would have been deemed invalid, and they would have had to start all over again. So, makes sense, right decision, yeah. And we'll see who's next.
Yeah, she's right. Well, we will see who's next. Now, one of the names that was out there when this all started was our own Attorney General, Andrew Bailey. I was kind of hoping for that because I had pinned down Mike Kehoe, the next governor. It was pretty clear that if that happened, he was going to appoint me the next United States Senator. I think we locked that up last week. But Andrew's not been mentioned here today very much, has he, Fred?
No, I've heard lots of names, but his isn't in.
And he is joining us on the show this afternoon. So either he's going to say, no, I'm not in the running, or yes, I'm leaving for Washington and I'm going to be the next attorney general. I think he'd be a great choice, by the way. But, you know, the other thing that comes into play here, and I'll probably ask this question, is people are at different points in their lives. You know, and Andrew Bailey has young kids, and you take a gig like this, you know, it's one of those situations where if you're asked to serve, sometimes it's hard to say no. But there's also ways to kind of, you know, communicate concerns and things, so positions may not be offered, but different names are being mentioned for AG. Look, there's a lot of good choices out there. I really think so, and I think they're going to come up with a better one than Matt Gaetz at this point. Now let's move to defense, because I think this is the next one that's going to drop. And I said this yesterday. I went into some detail about what was going on with Pete Hegseth, who had an issue back in 2017 at a hotel. He was there speaking at a conference, and they just released the entire police report from this incident. Now, what happened at the time is in the aftermath of that, there was a non-disclosure that was signed. There was a settlement that came out. The woman that he was with, and this is where it gets a little murky because, you know, his attorney says, no, Pete was highly intoxicated. The other side says, oh, this girl was maybe even given a roofie or something like that, and she doesn't remember anything from the time that she gets to the hotel and she wakes up. And I'm not going to get as graphic as the police report or, you know, the accounting that's in the LA Times or the Wall Street Journal, or the New York Times, but it's pretty graphic what happened, or the allegations are pretty graphic. So you have two things that are at play here. One, the Me Too moment, whatever you want to call it. And you know, I don't know. Maybe we'll never know what's true here and what's not true. I do think that this woman could have, you know, looked for an opportunity to cash a check. I don't know that. But both sides kind of agreed to keep it secret. So on the one hand, you have the incident itself, which would be of some concern to, let's not forget here that the United States Senate gets to confirm. So Democrats will ask questions. Republicans will ask questions. They could get rather embarrassing at times, depending on the circumstances. But the other part of this is, and this is what I said yesterday, and I think this is where, you know, the Trump team is right now. They feel, the reporting is, they feel that they were misled on this and that, you know, he did not tell the truth. So is this a soundbite from today, Fred?
I think he met reporters and he gave a brief comment.
So this was Pete Hegseth from today.
As far as the media is concerned, I'll keep this very simple. The matter was fully investigated, and I was completely cleared.
I don't know, based on what I read in the police report, based on what I read in the LA Times, now, you know, I don't know what I'm being told is true in the LA Times or the Wall Street Journal or anywhere else, but what I do know is the police report. Now, could the woman be completely making it up? Absolutely. You know, I think we've seen this before, but, you know, if you have a situation with another one of these appointments, it becomes a bit of a drag on the momentum. I think you might have to go in another direction. So we'll have to see what happens there. The other big story of the day, and this one just pisses me off more than anything else, is the release, or not the release, but the inability for the state of Illinois to hold Jussie Smollett accountable for his crime and for what he did to the country.
It's disgusting.
It is revolting. Thank you very much. And we're going to cover this a little bit. So, you know what's weird about this? Maybe it's coincidental. I don't really think I have premonitions, but I was just thinking about this 2 days ago. I really was. I think I was like coming back from the Walmart in High Ridge. And I'm thinking, because I think of random things, maybe something reminded me of it when I was listening to Fox. I'm like, I wonder what the hell has happened with that Jussie Smollett case, because I knew that it was on hold and that it was going to the Supreme Court. And of course, Fred, as you know, thanks to, you know, your behind the scenes executive producing, we became very close with a couple of people in connection with this story. Ron, one is Rafer Weigel. Rafer was briefly a Fox 2 anchor here. His father was a guy that I watched on television, Tim Weigel, a sports guy in Chicago. Rafer was there in Chicago at their Fox station when all this was happening. And, I mean, he became our go-to Jussie Smollett correspondent. He was on top of everything. He had police sourcing. It was great, and he was very generous to us, to the point where he gave us the contact for Gloria Rodriguez, who is the attorney that represented the Osundario brothers, who were the two, you know, African-American guys that Jussie hired to do all this. And Gloria is great as well. So I know we have Rafer coming up this afternoon. Fred, is Gloria going to perhaps join us as well?
We're going to try and get her at 4:45. She's going to check in at 4 and tell me if her schedule's free.
All right, so we might get her on as well. But now, the way that this went down today is this is essentially a technicality, right? So if you remember, Sue, at first, this was one of those things where this prosecutor, Kim Fox, very similar to what Kim Gardner was here in St. Louis, very similar to what George Gascon, the outgoing district attorney in L.A., all about social work and not holding people accountable. This is a big, well-publicized case. It's embarrassing for the city of Chicago. The police department's really hacked off because, you know, this guy tries to make them look like idiots. They're having none of it, right? They're like, look, this did not go down the way that this guy's, and they knew it from the very beginning, and then you had so much proof. But Kim Fox's office decided to cut a deal for like a $10,000 fine that would be given to a charity, and he was supposed to do some community service. Well, then there was so much backlash to that. Remember, they finally backed off, and that's how they went through the trial. He was convicted. I think he may have spent just, you know, a few hours behind bars, and then they released him on, you know, the condition of appeal. And this is what happened with the appeal. So here's Matt Finn on Fox talking about it.
Illinois Supreme Court writes in its ruling that Smollett's initial controversial agreement with Kim Fox's office that dropped his charges will hold, and the conviction that came after is reversed. The state Supreme Court writing in part, Illinois case law establishes that it is fundamentally unfair to allow the prosecution to renege on a deal with the defendant when the defendant has relied on the agreement to his detriment. Now, Smollett owed the bulk of his 150-day sentence for allegedly lying to police about being attacked by MAGA supporters in a racist, homophobic hate crime.
And he goes on to the details of the case. But essentially, now I'm not an attorney and I don't play one on the radio. We depend on people like Brad Young and others to kind of weigh in on this very, you know, specific technicality. The judges may have gotten it right. I don't know enough about it. What sucks is you got a guy that was never held accountable.
Never.
And there's still people out there that feel somehow that, you know, that he, I think he thinks he didn't do it. Let's bring back some memories, though.
I am not suicidal. I am innocent. And I am not suicidal. If I did this, then it means that I stuck my fist in the fears of Black Americans in this country for over 400 years
you
and
did.
The fears of the LGBTQ community. Your Honor, I respect you and I respect the jury, but I did not do this. And I am not suicidal. And if anything happens to me when I go in there, I did not do it to myself.
Wow.
And you must all know that. I respect you, Your Honor. I respect your decision. Jail time. Yeah. I am not suicidal.
Yeah, okay. And he didn't, you know, he didn't end up having very much jail time. Now, we hope that his career is over. That would be my small hope for Jussie Smollett. But let's really talk about what he did here. It wasn't the crime. It wasn't even faking out the public and the police. It was the effect that this had nationally and the way that people chimed in here. Everyone from AOC to the Biden administration to LeBron James, you know, everybody tweeted about it. They called it a modern day lynching. And this was another example of white supremacy. Not only white supremacy, but let's not forget, this was an example of MAGA white supremacy. Trump fans, anybody who likes Trump. You are a white supremacist to the point where you're going to beat up this poor young gay actor in Chicago who's just going out in the middle of the night when it's 30 below zero to get a sandwich. Who doesn't do that?
Yeah, and
who doesn't walk a few blocks to the subway when it's 30 below zero when you're a celebrity? Everybody does that. Come on.
And we've got the guys who told us that you paid them. We've got the check. We've got them on video buying it. You have witnesses. It's outrageous.
There is zero doubt I mean, you have to come up with reasonable. There is no doubt that this guy did this. And that Fox Nation special that Gloria, we mentioned, Gloria, she helped produce it. It's really good. Yes. It's a great documentary. One of the reasons that I don't think anyone else has done a documentary is because they did it so well. Then again, you know, the rest of the documentarian world out there, they're not exactly interested in any kind of stories that would go counter to a narrative of white supremacy. So let's keep that in mind. So we're going to cover that again with Rafer here a little bit later this afternoon. I got Duane Patterson coming up from Hot Air, and he will certainly have something to say about Matt Gaetz and some of the other cabinet appointments. Sue's news in the next hour. I spent some time. I don't know if you watched the CMAs last night at all, but Sue, you're going to appreciate.
I have some from that.
And I do too. So we may have to combine the information. Okay. I didn't know you were going to do that, so I apologize. But no. I watched quite a bit of it, and I thought some of the performances were really good. I also had an interesting moment with my daughter last night, and I want to share that. Because, you know, you have all these very interesting parenting moments. Justine Bateman has been back in the news here lately for good reason, because she had some things to say on Twitter in the aftermath of the election that probably her brother and some of the folks that her brother and she hangs with in Hollywood wouldn't agree with. But she kind of came out of the MAGA closet, if you will. Mm. And Peter Savodnik, who's a good, you know, friend of this show, he is an editor at the Free Press, wrote about this and really kind of talked about the broader themes of how Gen X broke for Trump. We addressed that just a little bit yesterday. We have the Attorney General, Andrew Bailey, coming on. Hopefully just our Attorney General now that Matt Gaetz is out. And then also a really good guest from Houston, Adam Elwanger, on education and how we can make education great again. Plus, an audio cut of the day. It's all coming up. Oh, Sue, I got a good one for you here this afternoon. Our local government folks are just comical. You know, we've talked about this situation with Dennis Hancock, who is my St. Louis County councilman. And remember what happened when he won his election? Wesley Bell and Sam Page tried to block him and get him kicked out of the council because he tried to hire his daughter-in-law. And the Constitution has this nepotism law. So they tried to get him out. Meantime, they're handing out jobs to former Cori Bush staffers, you know.
Like it's candy.
It's candy. So the whole thing was nonsense. We talked about it on the roundtable. They finally dropped it today. Bell's office determined, here's what the Channel 4 story says, they determined that withdrawing the, quote, Ronto petition would be the best interest of the public all of a sudden. And then this story, this is what they say at the bottom of the story. After announcing the withdrawal, Bell's office said that their case remained ongoing and that they still encourage anyone with information to call investigator Patrick Henson.
After it was dropped?
Well, is that like just a line that they accidentally put in there? Or
know,
if that's
so
real, it's
weird.
Even more embarrassing.
Wow.
Anyway, the whole thing should be over, and it should be dropped. So maybe they did the right thing here. Duane Patterson is back with us this afternoon. He contributes at hotair.com. He's also the host of the Duane's World podcast, has some thoughts about the cabinet picks, which are maybe falling through at this point. Duane, happy Thursday. How are you this afternoon?
I'm telling you, Mark, today is such a great day. The only way that this day could go wrong is if Matt Gaetz announced that he is relocating to California to run for governor.
Since that is your state, yeah, I think you're safe there, don't you think?
I'm hoping. I'm really hoping.
You know, I didn't like this one. I think you were in agreement. And one of the things I said is if, you know, I try to use a standard to a certain extent. If the other side does something as goofy as this and puts up someone like that, I'm going to probably take a really strong stand on my radio show about it. And I still feel like I'm missing something on this one, though, because we all kind of knew it wasn't going to last. So what happened here that I'm missing?
Well, I've got a couple of theories. I mean, of course, nobody knows exactly why. And to his credit, I will say about Matt Gaetz is the statement he made, whether he wrote it himself or somebody, you know, offered it for him. But the statement he gave was actually a good statement. You know, upon consideration, we don't have time to waste at the DOJ. We've got to get somebody in there on day one. And if I'm going to be a distraction and delay that work, it's probably best that I not be in consideration. That's actually the right call to make. But as far as two different theories of what happened, J.D. Vance went to the Senate yesterday, and independent of some of the proposed nominees that were doing their Sherpa meetings, talking to different senators to kind of get a sense of what's going on, J.D. Vance went to the Senate and kind of took the temperature from what I can discern. And once he kind of figured out that there just were not going to be the votes for Matt Gaetz, He probably reported back to the president or the president-elect. And once he told Donald Trump that it was probably not going to happen, it wouldn't be surprised if Donald Trump gave him a call and said, okay, well, you know, we tried, but it ain't going to happen.
Right.
And that was the end of it. The other theory is Gates himself went up in the Hill and tried to go through the motions as well. And he's got four hard no's against him. And you can say what you want about the four and where they come down on it. But my guess is if you've got four hard no's, there's probably 25 of them that were being forced to walk the plank that are really relieved at those four for taking the stand that they did so they don't have to walk the plank.
Yeah, I think it was a combo deal a little bit. I think certainly J.D. Vance is going to be very valuable in that role from a variety of perspectives, not only, you know, doing a little recon as far as where the votes are, even though he's not responsible as John Barrasso will be to whip up those votes, but he can easily take the temperature and he knows these guys so well. He's got great relationships. But I do think that Matt Gaetz went up there and, you know, determined himself that this was not going to go the way they had hoped, and maybe it was a joint decision between the president and the administration and Matt Gaetz.
So worst case scenario, if you're Matt Gaetz, is you resign from Congress. The report doesn't ever get released. It's still kind of bottled up in House ethics. So if it's not going to go public and he doesn't go back into Congress, even though he just technically won re-election, if he chooses not to go back in, then what he really wanted to do, what his game plan was to run for Florida governor in 2 years when Ron DeSantis is done. That was always his plan. Now, I think he'd be a horrible candidate for governor of Florida. I'm not a big fan of Matt Gaetz, but I think that's what his calculation was. And the one thing about Matt Gaetz is he's not a Trump loyalist. Matt Gaetz is a Matt Gaetz loyalist. And if that's the direction he wanted to go, you know, at the end of the day, he doesn't have this report out there that's against him at this point. There's no evidence against him at this point. So he can kind of lick his wounds for a couple of years and then try to
figure it out from there. Right.
For governor.
Absolutely. Right. Now, I woke up this morning to this report in the LA Times and elsewhere, and I did, you know, immediately look at the police report from Pete Hegseth. And, you know, there's a couple of what I said at the intro of the show during the monologue, Dwayne, is there's a couple of different, you know, issues here. One is the incident itself that happened in 2017 that I still think have some doubts about the veracity and the entire truth. But maybe more importantly, there seems to be an indication, you probably have some good sourcing on this, that they were not, Pete was not exactly honest with the Trump team when it came to this particular issue.
That's certainly possible. From what I'm getting a lay of the land, Mark Wayne Mullen came out very strongly for him today, and there's been lots of senators that have taken public stands to support him. The one thing about Pete Hegseth going into defense, it's not like he's running for a high position where there is a lot of a legal bar for this, meaning, you know, he's a warrior. He's going in there to do one job. The job he's doing is to basically blow out the, you know, the senior chain of command of the Pentagon and get rid of all the career woke generals and start to elevate from the ranks below and you know, recreate that warrior ethos again. I think that Scott Jennings on CNN probably had it best this week when he said, look, of all the nominees, and there's been 30 that he's picked thus far, and we, of course, we Republicans and regime media, they like to do the same thing. We focus on the ones we think are clunkers. Of the 30 picks, you can almost you can pick three or four that are really the ones that are questionable. The rest are going to sail through, and many of the rest of them are home run picks. I'm warming up to the Pete Hegseth thing. I think he'd actually do a pretty good job. I was skeptical at first, but if you actually look at what he says he's going to do and what he wrote in his book, he knows exactly what has to be done at that agency. Now he's going to have to comport himself in a confirmation hearing. But I think the way Scott Jennings framed it is Matt Gaetz was the only one of the bunch that had to play his way in, meaning he's the only one that fell below the bar of confirmation going into the process. everybody else probably would get confirmed unless they tank their own hearing and they played themselves out of the game.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
I do, but here's the problem with that is if you read, and again, I don't know what the truth is. I'm not saying that I know what the truth is. The police report is very damning. And he's going to be asked about a lot of gruesome, you know, details of that. So I don't know how you come out of that in a good way. And it's unfortunate for Pete if the whole thing was just a money grab on the part of the woman, which is certainly a possibility. That's what his side says. You know, they signed an NDA. I don't know if we'll ever know what the truth is. What I do know is I read the whole police report, and it's not a good look if some of that is true.
It is not a good look, and it will. It will definitely go to a confirmation hearing. I don't think he will pull himself out of contention unless he gets the same reaction from four senators, and he knows it's a doom pick going in. Matt Gaetz knew that Lisa Murkowski, the new senator from Utah, John, I forget his last name. There's the guy that replaced Mitt Romney.
Yeah. I've heard his name too.
And Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, the Utah senator, and Mitch McConnell were all going to come out against him. But I promise you, they weren't going to be the only four. And both J.D. Vance and Matt Gaetz heard that. With regards to Pete Hegseth, I really don't know if there are four votes against him right now. It could develop if this story continues to kind of get worse and he doesn't have a good answer for it in a confirmation hearing. But barring that, I think Trump's going to get deference. I think this, if there's a scalp that the left is going to be able to claim, it's the Matt Gaetz scalp.
What did you make of Bathroomgate this week?
I think that was actually kind of pretty remarkable. It's such a silly story all the way around, but it's such an important one in the overall scheme of things. I talked to your former senator, Jim Talent, who's a really good friend of mine on the podcast.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's great.
Jim's an old friend. I've known him for years and years and years. And he gave a really extemporaneous explanation about how 100 years ago there were no women's bathrooms in public. And one of the reasons why there was the fight to put women's bathrooms in public was because women have a unique set of needs being out in public when they have to use the restroom in private for obvious reasons. And by putting women's restrooms in public next to men's rooms, it gave women the ability to make it easier to be more prevalent and able to be part of public life more. And by doing this, there's no biological need for this member of Congress coming in from Delaware to have any special bathroom privileges on his or her own. There's just no biological need for it. I like the counter that was offered, which is, okay, let's have Democratic men's and women's rooms and Republican men's and women's rooms.
Yeah, and see which Democrats are comfortable having a biological male
in the restrooms.
Exactly
right.
Yeah,
let the Republican caucus make up the rules for their bathrooms and let the Democrats make up the rules for their bathrooms.
I do think that the congressperson from Delaware made the right choice and said, look, I'm going to follow the rules. Let's move forward and, you know, be done with it, because I do think there's more important things. I'd love to get your thoughts on some of the Doge stuff, but I'm out of time. I got to cover Jussie Smollett and that nonsense this afternoon, Dwayne.
Oh, good luck.
I know, right? Hey, have a great day.
This day got even better. I got spared Jussie Smollett. Oh, yeah. This day gets better and better.
Thanks a lot. Hey, have a great Thanksgiving. We will talk soon.
Thanks,
we'll
Mark.
See you.
See
bye.
I am not suicidal.
Stop laughing about facts.
I am not suicidal, and I am innocent. I could have said that I was guilty a long time ago.
That might have been some of the best acting Jussie Smollett has ever done in that courtroom in Chicago, and we had a development on this story that is rather disappointing today, because he's not going to have to serve his jail time, which is unfortunate because he gets off scot-free. Maybe his career ended up getting ruined about this whole thing, but when everything started in Chicago, Rafer Weigel was up there in television at the Fox station, Fox 32. He was here in St. Louis for a while, and as I mentioned earlier, I used to watch his dad on TV, so we became friends. And Rafer, you've been our go-to guy on this case from the very beginning. We had to have you back this afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing fine, but I'm shocked. And a lot of people are shocked as well, Mark. I mean,
Dan Webb, the special prosecutor, spent 2 years working tirelessly to prove that, yes, he did in fact commit a crime and should be prosecuted, only to have that thrown out the window. The people that I've spoken to in Illinois did not see this coming. A couple of the judges were not involved in the decision. Many are accusing them of being activist judges. But if a lot of people feel this sets a really bad precedent. As you looked at it, Mark, basically what they said is, well, he was found guilty, but then his convictions were tossed out, and therefore the state did not have the right to prosecute him a second time, sort of the double jeopardy rule. Well, the argument against that is, well, what happens if somebody is convicted of a crime that they did not commit, and then you go back and have a special prosecutor gain their innocence? Does that then give the state the right to go back and say, no, you found him guilty before, he's got to stay in jail, or whoever? So it's a very shocking development indeed, but I guess he's happy. He's getting his $120,000 back that he had to pay to the city of Chicago.
But a lot of this on the Supreme Court's behalf, my understanding is they looked at that agreement, the deal, the sweetheart deal that he cut with Kim Fox, which ironically is what got him, you know, into that courtroom to begin with, because everyone was so outraged by the sweetheart deal.
Exactly. So the sweetheart deal, they're saying, should have stayed in place, and that the state or the county did not have the right to overturn that sweetheart deal. So, you know, the legal experts and the pundits are going to be having a field day on this, because this is setting a massive precedent that could also swing the pendulum in the other direction. But it is kind of interesting, isn't it, Mark, that just when you thought the Jussie Smollett drama and saga was over, then it comes out and takes another turn. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
You know, Rafer, this is a true story, and I'm not a big premonition guy, but I literally just this week was thinking about this guy, because it just, I don't know why, but it came, you know, into my brain about how he still hasn't been punished for this, and I wondered what the Supreme Court was going to do, and lo and behold, we have this ridiculous decision today. We think we might have Gloria Rodriguez. Rafer was great because he hooked us up with Gloria, who was the attorney for the Osundario brothers. She was the producer of this great Fox Nation documentary I highly recommend on all this. So I'm always very grateful to you for that. But in your reporting, let's go back to the beginning of this, because the cops kind of sniffed this out pretty quickly, didn't they?
Well, they did. But what was so interesting about the case, Mark, is that, you know, the cops, when I got the PIO on the phone, public information officer Anthony Guglielmi, you know, his exact words were, oh, yeah, this is a bunch of BS.
Yeah.
So and anybody who lives in Chicago knows that there's no way that two white supremacists walking around with MAGA hats, carrying rope and bleach and beating up African-Americans at 3 o'clock in the morning in a polar vortex.
Yeah, I know.
So
See, when you rattle all that stuff off, you realize the lunacy of all this, because sometimes you forget all the details, right?
And that was why it was such a fascinating thing for me, because when the police confessed to me, they were skeptical, and I tweeted that skepticism out. Yes, I was skeptical, but I didn't post that I was skeptical, that police were. And the reaction from it was like, how dare you? Oh, my God. Huh. The humanity. It's like, come on. There's no way this happened. So that was fascinating from the word go. And even Kim Fox, and when she dismissed the charges, said the guy did it, but he didn't deserve to be prosecuted. So the folks who still say he's innocent, make no mistake. Nobody's saying he's innocent. Fox didn't say that. Dan Webb didn't. And even the Supreme Court is not saying he's innocent with the tossing this out. They're just saying the special prosecution didn't follow proper procedure.
And the statement from the prosecutor today was, make no mistake, today's ruling has nothing to do with Mr. Smollett's innocence. The Illinois Supreme Court did not find any error with the overwhelming evidence presented at trial that Mr. Smollett orchestrated a fake hate crime and reported it to the Chicago Police Department as a real hate crime, or the jury's unanimous verdict that Mr. Smollett was guilty. And as you know, Rafer, this is so much more than just about Jussie Smollett, because of what it did to the country. And again, one of those fake hoaxes that people like LeBron James and AOC and the Biden administration ran with as this big indication of white supremacy that's run rampant across this country.
I remember after it broke that Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi both tweeted out, these white supremacist attacks need to stop happening in America.
Right.
I responded to both and said, hey, you may want to find out if this actually happened before you tweet this. Those tweets were, in fact, taken down. But I think what's interesting, you know, you guys have a lot of people, a lot of listeners who are anti-woke culture, and you look what happened with the election recently.
Right.
You know, the Smollett thing was definitely kind of woke culture pendulums kind of swinging in their direction. But then the backlash from it, for most people, is like, look, we're tired of this. We're tired of the special treatment. We're tired that if we question an African-American that we're racist in some way, or we have white privilege. And I think that it's kind of fascinating from a sociological perspective. And I love your perspective on it, Mark. You've looked at this thing as not just a specific incident, but you really look at how how people react around it as a commentary on where we really are as a society. So the timing of this post-election is very interesting.
I'd like to think that, I don't know if they'll ever do polling on this, but I would assume that a fair majority of African-Americans know how goofy this is and how ridiculous and embarrassing this was as well. You don't hear from them as much, but I'm pretty fairly sure that they feel that way. Hey, you're out in California now. How are things going out there?
Well, it's nice and warm and sunny, and the weather is fantastic. I'm still taxed as crazy out here as I was in Illinois. But, at least I guess I'm getting paid back in sunshine. But I hear things are nice in St. Louis. I haven't been back there in quite some time, but I certainly enjoyed my time there at Fox 2 and the folks there. They seem to be going strong. So, all my best to my former St. Louis viewers when I was on Fox 2 with Sandy Miller at 6 and 10 p.m.
Well, Rafer, thanks so much for being my go-to correspondent on this. And you just never know. Maybe there's another chapter in this saga still to come, right? But you've been awesome. Great Thanksgiving.
If anybody would know it, Mark, apparently it's you. You already had the premonition that this was going to happen. So next time there's Jesse Smollett news, will you text me
and
let me know ahead of time?
I will. I should have texted. It would have been more establishing if I would have texted you a couple of days ago and this happens. All right, dude. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You got it.
All right. That's great. You know, and we kind of, we took ownership of that very quickly because I remember that tweet from Rafer. And then, people like, I'm not saying I'm brilliant. Don't get me wrong, Sue. But Zig and me and some other people who like to call out the fake, hate crimes.
Right.
It was pretty easy to handicap this one. And then it just took on a life of its own. And then in the aftermath, you remember he sits down with the Robin Roberts interview and, declares his innocence and tries to make people feel like this really was this hate crime, even though at that point it was pretty well established that it was fake. But that was before we knew all the details.
Down.
Right. That was before we knew all the details from the Osundario brothers. And I'm telling you, if you have not watched that Fox Nation documentary,
it's so good.
It is really, really good. They have a new Fox Nation is interesting. They do some interesting content. They have this new Martin Scorsese thing that they've been promoting quite a bit. All right, we're going to take a break here at the top of the hour before Sue's news. I got a few things that I want to go over from last night in particular. I watched the CMAs, a little reaction to that. I think I've decided I'm getting a face tattoo, so we'll share some information about
smart.
That. The aforementioned Gloria Rodriguez may check in with us. She's busy with some other cases. She's a busy attorney, but she's going to let Fred know if she can join us a little bit later in the hour. We have Andrew Bailey, the Attorney General of Missouri, who has been on a short list a couple of weeks ago as a possible U.S. Attorney General. And the big story today is, and this is completely unrelated, we had Andrew Bailey, set up well before any information this morning from Matt Gaetz. He's pulled his name out of consideration to be Attorney General. And then I read a great piece yesterday, and there's been discussion of getting rid of the Department of Education, and some people might not understand the complexities of that and why the Department of Education is a big bureaucracy that really doesn't help kids in this country learn anything. But there is a professor at the University of Houston by the name of Adam Elwanger who wrote a great piece on Real Clear yesterday about making education great again. And some of the ideas he has are fantastic. Whether we get rid of the Department of Education or not, there should be some educational priorities that are sort of outlined from Washington. And Adam, Professor Elwanger, has some great suggestions. So he's coming up at 5:25 plus an audio cut of the day. Don't forget tomorrow, we got a Reardon Roundtable. Jane will not be here. State Rep Donna Behringer, former State Senator Jeff Smith, and Sean Flower, the mayor of Eureka. It all starts at 3 tomorrow.
Get more at 971talk.com.